Hello, everyone. Welcome to this set of 10 podcasts, which we're calling Against All Gods, the 10 Plagues in Exodus. My name is Todd. I'm one of the pastors at First Family. And yes, this set of 10 podcasts focused on the 10 plagues in Exodus is somewhat of a subset of podcasts of the Extra Point podcast. We want to release one podcast per plague, and we want to do it within this week. And so you'll find a number of episodes all pertaining to the 10 plagues in Egypt. We're calling this set, of course, Against All Gods. And we're looking how Yahweh, the Lord, delivered his people from Egypt through these 10 plagues, which each of them was against a specific god in Egypt. And we really base that on the scriptures because Exodus 12:12, which is a verse right in the middle of the 10th plague, says this, Exodus 12:12, I am the Lord, I will execute judgments against all the gods of Egypt. And so that final plague, the death of the firstborn, was the concluding judgment of 10 that were against Egyptian gods, proving supremacy of Yahweh, and of course then the deliverance of God's people. So this is the focus of this subset of podcasts known as Against All Gods. Now, as you are aware, Pastor Brett spoke about the first 9 plagues last Sunday. I'll be speaking about the final plague this coming Sunday. We want to give some more detail about each of those in this intervening set of days. Obviously, he couldn't have covered all 9 in any kind of detail, and I won't be able to cover the 10th one in as much detail as it demands. And so we're just kind of mentioning them and keeping some cohesion between the first 9, the last one, showing a lot of unity into what God's up to in the big picture. And so we're using these podcasts to help us get more insight into each one and to increase not only our biblical knowledge, but our understanding of God and how he works and his incredible deliverance of the people in Egypt, his people, the Israelites. So let's get started and let's talk about plague number 1, the Nile turned to blood, or what is sometimes commonly referred to as just water turned to blood. This plague is found in Exodus 7, verses 14 to 24. It is the very first plague that's brought upon the Egyptians. To feel the weight of what's really happening in Exodus 7, I think we have to understand first the weight that the Nile carried to the Egyptians. It was not just a nearby river, okay? But that city depended on this water source, so much so that they worshipped it. It was a deity to them. In fact, many Egyptian priests, history records, would offer daily sacrifices to the river, and it was the god of Api. This was a god in Egypt. It was the god of fertility, the god of abundance. You may have seen pictures. This little g god is plump, blue-skinned. He's often carrying offering tables. He's seen as the father of life, the guarantor of abundance. And I need to make a specific designation here because it wasn't just that he was the god of the Nile in general. He really was known as the god of the Nile during what's known as its inundation, which is a time period, usually July through September, when the Nile would flood its banks. And of course, this brought a lot of rich sediment. This brought a lot of rich nutrients to all kind of parts of the land. So it was not an inconvenience because it really brought life to much of that area. It was an annual event, so it was seen almost like a worship liturgy. This time of the year was seen as a very fertile time, and so that really helped them survive other times of the year. And so they credited this to a god they named Api, and he was mainly known as the god of the inundation season. Now, during that season, the Nile would take on a reddish-brown hue. It was very iron oxide rich, the silt that would sweep down, of course, from the highlands. And so they would have known this color, but what they had never seen was the opposite of the life that the inundation produced, because now the Nile was turned to blood, something of a similar color, but it was producing death. In fact, a total death of the river's ecosystem. The text tells us it was 7 full days, and so fish were dead, the water was reeking, even water stored in wooden vessels, stone jars, all that water turned to blood. So this was not a natural phenomenon. This was a supernatural miracle brought about by Yahweh. I find it very interesting that Moses doesn't wade into the water and stir the water up. That's not how he begins this miracle. Instead, he raises his staff. He strikes the Nile. It's an act of, you know, declaration of war almost. And he's declaring war against the god, Api, in the name of Yahweh. And he's attacking really their fundamental source of life. And I believe that's why this is the first one. He's trying to get their attention. He's going after really what is their fundamental source of survival. But there's even more here, because there was a theological target even beyond Api. The Egyptians also associated the Nile with Osiris. This was the god, little g of course, little g, god of death and resurrection. In fact, some Egyptians believed that the bloodstream of this god was flowing in the river, a very mythological understanding, of course. But this was the god that they felt whose blood was in that river. And so that, combined with Api, led to fertility, survival, abundance. And of course, if you think about this, combine that with the fact that in Ezekiel 29:3, Pharaoh himself even said this, that the Nile was his. I made it for myself. Pharaoh claimed ownership of this river. Ezekiel speaking of that, of course, in retrospect. But this is interesting that the Nile was considered Pharaoh's domain. He was considered a deity as well. Two gods were associated with it. And so really, in one blow, Yahweh, through Moses, is striking at three targets. Api, the river god, Osiris, the deity of life and death, and of course then Pharaoh, who's considered the divine king. He presumes to own the source of all Egyptian life via the Nile. And so God starts at that very beginning point. He starts at the foundation, showing the Egyptians he is supreme over their very source of life, their very fundamental method of survival. Now, before we close, it's important to think about an applicational aspect of this, because I think every society, every culture, every person has its quote-unquote Nile, you know, its primary source of life. Like, what do we look to bring us fundamental meaning? Like, what river do you trust? What is the thing that if God removed it tomorrow would cause your whole world to feel like it had turned to blood? Everyone has one of these. Every civilization, every culture, every organization. You see, we don't often build temples any longer to our power grids, but that may be what many of us build our life around. We don't offer sacrifices to the stock market, but if it collapses, we may speak of it in similar language like, hey, the world is over now. And you can just kind of begin to think about, what is the river that you trust as you look at our society? What's the river or rivers that they trust? And I just want to remind you that no river is sufficient for ultimate meaning, ultimate forgiveness, real a purpose in life, other than the blood of Christ. And of course, this is a contrast now, because the Passover lamb's blood will appear later on doorposts. It will appear centuries later, of course, when Christ dies on the cross. But his blood is not a sign of judgment. It's one of rescue. And so in some sense, you'll see the blood of the Nile really juxtaposed against the blood of the lamb as Exodus unfolds. I just want to encourage you, and I want to encourage myself, to continually depend upon the blood of the Lamb as the source of all spiritual life, as the source of all meaning and purpose and forgiveness. It's the source of our life. Christ is. And so we don't trust our quote-unquote Nile. We trust Yahweh and the sacrifice of his Son, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world by the shedding of his blood and the sacrifice of his body. One more observation before we close. Moses strikes the Nile, yes. It turns to blood. The consequences ensue. But interestingly, the Egyptian magicians, they do replicate this sign. And In an odd turn of events, Pharaoh turns and walks away. He's unbothered. His heart is very hard. He just goes home. And so there's something very chilling in that detail. This first plague doesn't seem to break Pharaoh, even though I think we can safely say it was aimed at a real fundamental aspect of their culture, of their whole civilization. It does reveal something, that they were led by a man who can watch his nation's lifeblood turn to death and then apparently just go home for lunch as if it was no big deal. It seems to indicate he had already made his decision. And so I say that because I think we'll discover the plagues don't create Pharaoh's hardness. They expose it. And we're going to return to this pattern or this truth again and again in this 10-podcast series, that judgment reveals what is already true. Our next episode, it's all about frogs. But there's a whole lot more going on than just a green jumping animal. More on that on the next edition of Against All Gods.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.